Hello, my name is Colm O'Regan, and welcome to the latest episode of The World Etc., a monthly podcast in association with Trokra, looking at topical issues facing people around the world. Today, we're taking a look at the issue of climate change, environmentalism, and what people can do to make small but positive changes in their lives to make a difference. I'm joined in the studio by two special guests. Saoirse Hamilton is an Irish Times journalist who has recently started a series of One Change articles which are extremely relevant to our discussion today, looking at the positive changes people can make in their day-to-day lives. And Paula Butler worked as an environmental consultant for over 20 years, but for the past 2.5 years, she's been on a personal crusade to reduce the carbon footprint generated by herself and her family. She calls her initiative the Eco-Conscious Living Project. So we'll talk later on in the programme about weightier issues, the global aspect of it, but starting with the personal, starting with you, Paula. You were an environmental consultant, or yeah, you still are, but did you feel that you were telling other people what should be done or recommending, and then you started to look at your own life? Is that kind of how it evolved?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had been working, advising business and the government actually on climate change, and I was providing training, and I was saying all the time, hearing myself saying deep behavioural change, that's what we need here, more of the plastic bag tax and for all of that. And then I suppose I had my own kind of awakening, saying, oh my God, here I am telling government and business that that's what we need, and really, what am I doing in my own life? And so I suddenly kind of looked at myself and thought, well, God, like, I'm such a hypocrite. Here I am telling everybody to change and not really changing myself.
Were you bringing takeaway coffee cups into meetings?
Oh yeah, doing all of that.
To tell people what to change.
Living in the wrong house, driving the wrong car, which I still am doing, because these things, you know, the reality is they take a long time to change. So I had that kind of like awakening and thought, oh my God, I really need to start looking at this. Now I have a husband and two kids, so it's been a kind of very kind of hands-on practical approach, because it has to be, because, you know, I have to bring my family and my kids along with me on the journey. And I'm probably 20% of the way to where I want to be. You know, I have a long way to go yet, but it's just doing small things every day and being aware of what I'm doing and looking for ways to improve that every day.
And people can read about this. They can go along on this trip with you.
Yeah, exactly. I have my own website, ecoconsciousliving.ie, and I have posts up there on all the various things that I've done over the last 2 years. And a lot of them, I've put a lot of research and work into it. My background originally is science, and I've kind of come back to that, and like lots of little research projects on, you know, what's the best way to clean the house without using chemicals, for example. And I've done a lot of work on that and have kind of worked to get to a very simple solution that is environmentally friendly, but also has to work well, you know. So that's my general approach.
And we might deep dive to use that transformational change term later in the individual topics. Just to come to you, Saoirse, what has been your journey? Are you from that background, environmentally speaking, or were you journalizing in other areas? And as environmentalism and climate change became as big a topic as the recession used to be, you know, and you felt it's impossible not to write about it.
It feels a bit inescapable these days. I mean, you can't listen to the radio or look online without hearing more information about what's happening, you know, global warming, the climate, you know, that we're in the sixth mass extinction of species. All these frightening statistics are coming at us all the time. And I think for a long time I was reading a lot about this. But only in the last number of years, maybe about 3 years, it feels like these issues have really started coming at us. And, you know, I started wondering about, in terms of how that connects to us as individuals. You know, you're reading about these big issues on the macro level, and then you're coming home and your own recycling bin is full of stuff, and you're thinking, why is all this waste coming into my house? And then also, I have two children. They also have started coming home talking about plastic. So to a certain extent, the issue has become you know, everywhere. But in terms of my own approach to it, I was writing about beer. I was writing a weekly column about beer up until a while ago. And I wrote one column about cans becoming the new in thing in craft beer. And it just, it was basically to compare what was better between cans and bottles. And it really just kind of got me excited about this whole idea of really looking into the details and how difficult it is sometimes to get the facts about what is better for us. And, you know, how to know what way to go about these changes and to make the right kind of decisions. So I suppose the reason why I wanted to start, I was very lucky to be asked to do this column with, I write it every other week with Mancon Magan, who's a broadcaster and journalist.
He was writing
also
about apples and oranges the other week.
He was right. Yeah, that was a great piece. And so, yeah, we both take turns looking at different elements of it. And the idea is to have, you know, small changes that you can make in your life to contribute, you know.
You touched on something there which it feels very real to me. I'm old enough to have been watching Captain Planet and the Planeteers, you know, religiously every Thursday or whenever it was as a cartoon years ago. And it was quite a binary thing. Polluters were Duke Nukem or the guy who Poison Ivy, or they were the bad, and then the Planeteers were the good, and the fixes were magic rings, and if you combine the five of them, you had Captain Planet, and he fixed everything. And for that, good. I feel like I still crave that simplicity when it comes to changing things. You know, that the idea that bad guys are very identifiable, and to do good, there is a quick fix with no knock-on effect. It's like when you're watching a disaster film and they try and save the plane from crashing, but they destroy the whole airport, you know.
Not
and
good.
I suppose for both of you, that challenge in it's almost like is our first step that we need to tell people it's complex and there won't be simple solutions, but that's not a reason to do nothing. Like, is because often what happens is you say, right, we do this, even in terms of plastic bags.
Yeah.
So you find out that plastic bags were bad. And we pat ourselves on the back for changing that. But then people are just buying a load of stronger plastic bags and often throwing them away. Or people are buying organic cotton, lovely tote bags that might be using up tons of water. You know, that the complexity is often the hardest challenge to get across to people.
Yeah, and I mean, I think people do get that it's complex. I mean, you know, and a lot of sometimes the communication on climate change makes it so complex and negative so quickly, it's very off-putting. Like, my whole approach to it is more about empowerment and saying, for example, let's say, you know, you look into your shower and there's like 10 bottles with shampoo and God knows what and body washes. Well, one of the things that we did was we just changed to a bar of soap.
Bar of soap, yeah.
Like, that is the simplest thing in the world. Now, I mean, you also then have, you know, okay, well, the soap gets all slimy and horrible, but I have a little kind of like muslin bag, and when the soap gets grungy, it pops in there and I use it as a body scrub.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going maybe to the next level to say, well, why do people not want to use soap? They don't want to use it because it gets all manky. We'll put it into the little bag and use it as a scrubby. But like, switching to soap couldn't be easier. Now then, of course, you can take it another level again. Well, let's get soap that's Irish made. Let's get soap that's palm oil free. And that's where you bring people eventually. But even just to try and get people to change their behaviour to buy the soap instead of the bottle of body wash, that's a first step. And you can then bring people on that journey. But I think people need to be shown how some of the simple steps can work. They're not perfect.
Yeah.
And it's not about perfection. It's about just taking the first step and then the next step. And going on that journey.
And it's interesting. Sorry, could you want to come in first?
No, I think it's really interesting that you say that about, you know, the first step. You know, often people will say, you know, oh, you know, reusable cup, you know, if I get a reusable coffee cup, you know, that's not going to change. That's not going to save the world, right? Mm. And it isn't. That's you know, it's true. But it's a step. And, you know, a lot of research has found that once people take that first step to thinking about, you know, just even one thing, like I'm going to get a reusable water bottle, you know, the other things will follow then. It exactly. widens out. And so that's Absolutely. What's the positive thing about it, is that it does open out rather than, you know, there is that kind of negative dialogue that goes on going, oh God, here we go again. Well, you know, we need to do this, or I can't do that, or I shouldn't do that. Whereas a lot of the time, these changes are actually enriching to your life. They make things simpler, and they do enrich your life, I believe.
What was it about things that, two things that fascinated me was how the ozone layer issue, I'm not saying it's fixed, but we rallied behind it. We found it easier to get behind that. We found it easier to change our Lynx Africa to one that didn't, you know, the CFC story. And the other one was acid rain. They seem like relics of an older time where we, like, what was going on then in terms of replicating some of the success story, or is even, can we consider them success stories when it comes to changing stuff now?
I think the issue is that what's happening now is much more complicated than the ozone layer or acid rain. You know, if you read a lot of the scientific research, I've just been reading the book Uninhabitable Earth, and David Wallace Wells, who's a fantastic writer, has written about this phrase called, you know, the climate kaleidoscope, which is like there is so much going on. We don't actually even know exactly how everything will pan out. So it is a massive, it is a huge concept for us to even get our heads around as individuals, but also even in terms of how exactly we go about that. I mean, some of the solutions are simple. I mean, reduce emissions, that's one straight up answer. But even in terms of just as individuals understanding, what does it mean if we don't have any bees anymore? What does it mean if, you know, our trees don't grow anymore, you know, all these kind of things. So I think that is probably one of the bigger differences between that and the example you're giving there.
I'll
say something about that though. Like, I mean, obviously I've been working in the environment, so I left college and started working as an environmental consultant. When I graduated, there were two environmental consultancies in the whole of this country, and I volunteered to work for them for free to get some experience. And in the early days, I didn't even tell people what I did, because they would go, oh, like, you're a tree hugger. You know, I mean, that was where people leapt to, like, well, you know, you must be a tree hugger if you're working on the environment. And now, like, for someone like me to see the transformation that has happened even in the last year, 6 months, the last 3 months, like, it's just been, you know, accelerating the level of awareness. And I think people...
Is that only going in one direction? It's not psych. Do you think it's something that will only increase, or is awareness cyclical, do you think?
Well, I think my concern about it, I mean, like, I'm celebrating it on one level because, like, you know, having had to explain, like, not even explain where I work because people just didn't get it, to kind of other people being as educated or more educated.
Now you might
me.
As well be working in computers. It's so
yeah,
hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But my concern about it, though, is that when a politician mentions climate change, the next word out of their mouth is carbon tax. And I worry that it's going to be the next water charges, because people will very quickly go, well, climate change means financial penalties. And I think we're about saying, no, actually, there's loads of fringe benefits to when you make a small change for the environment, but there's loads of benefits to you as a person and your quality of life. So I think we need to work hard to make sure we don't end up transforming all this goodwill into water charges, you know, protest, and having it being a negative thing, because it could quickly flip if we don't manage the communication on it very carefully and make sure people understand there's massive personal benefits to changing your daily habits. Massive, you know.
Going back to those smaller changes that you can make, two charges that would be levelled against anybody who goes to bat for making small changes at home. One is money and the other one is time. Yeah. So the kind of the caricature of somebody who's creating alternatives to the stuff that can just be picked up in bulk in a chain supermarket. Well, it's cheaper there. And the other one is it's just easier to buy it than mix all the things. It's the same that could be applied to, you know, food and cooking and all that.
Yeah, making your own biscuits or whatever.
What has been your experience? And stripping out that, you know, you probably are reasonably financially comfortable enough to make the to take a risk on it. But let's if you imagine yourself as being at the pin of your collar, struggling with bills and starting now because you read about changes you can make, controlling for that, what has been your experience in, say, alternatives to even just domestic products?
I think the one that my favorite one on that line is switching to the green cleaning. And again, like I did a lot of work and experimenting. It didn't just happen overnight. But once I had kind of come to a solution that
so
I thought
would work. So you've taken a bit of the hit for other people.
I've taken a lot of the hit, I can tell you. And so what I did then was to kind of force myself to make the change. Was I took all my sea of multicolored plastic bottles of like oven cleaners and you name it, bleach, and I put them all in a big box and they went out into the garage. I didn't throw them away because I was thinking this might not go the way I wanted to. And then I basically have a small kit that I use, which is a disinfectant, which is made of vinegar. It's white vinegar. It's like cheap as anything. I get a big glass bottle in a Polish supermarket is the cheapest way to buy it. And I steep it in orange peel so that it doesn't smell, my house doesn't smell like a chip shop. And I put orange essential oil in. That works as a really good disinfectant. Then I take a cup of that, mix with a cup of water, and that's in a bottle, and that's my glass cleaner. And then my third bottle is a multi-purpose cleaner, which is a cup of water and a tablespoon of Castile soap, which is a natural soap that is a little bit expensive, but you use a tablespoon for a whole cup. And that's what I use, along with a bit of baking soda, for 95% of my cleaning of my house. It looks nice. I have it in nice spray bottles. I don't use any chemicals to clean the house anymore. It's much cheaper. Like it's like you save 70%. I've done the maths on it. I've got a little spreadsheet, worked out how much does it cost in Tesco, okay, blah, blah, blah. And you save 70% by switching to this. Now, okay, you do have to make, when my multi-purpose cleaner runs out, I do have to mix it up. But like it's a cup of water and a tablespoon of Castile soap. It's as easy as making a cup of tea. You know, so it's a great example of a step that people can take that's much cheaper. I mean, if you do a big weekly shop and you have bleach and all your cleaners, you'll find the shop is much more expensive because they're
very heavy, costly. And heavy if you're walking, if you have to walk to the supermarket
point,
as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that is a really simple switch that people can make. Plus also you're reducing a lot of the chemicals in your house. Like when you're spraying oven cleaner into your oven that you're going to cook your chicken in, you know, you're holding your mouth, you know, your face away. It's toxic. So like why? I mean, looking back on it now, I look back and go, why did I use all those chemicals for all those years? It's going back to the way our grandparents maybe cleaned their houses. It's perfectly effective. And I do keep a little bottle of Dettol if we have a dog, and if the dog does something on the kitchen floor, I use the Dettol. And it's really for my own peace of mind, or you know, because I think, oh well, Dettol must be clean. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's not it, you know.
With hybrid solutions, there are hybrid cars. You're not a fundamentalist on this.
No, and I'm not saying you can't keep a bottle of bleach or whatever else use your favorite cleaner for when something happens in the house that needs a bit of, you know, extra power. Even if you just used this to some extent, whatever way you take it, even if you just use the disinfectant or you just use the glass cleaner or you just use the multi-purpose cleaner, you'd be eliminating and reducing your environmental impact significantly, and you'd be saving yourself money. So that is a nice project that is, you know, saves you money, improves your health, and is environmentally friendly. They don't always, you know, the perfect solution doesn't always come for in every facet, but that's one area that's a no-brainer.
Okay. And one thing you mentioned there about going back to the way our grandparents did it, and I think about the same about clothing and lots of other consumer products. I remember reading somewhere that the really awful consumption, like that surge, that it was around the 80s, that people just started buying more stuff, and some of it was necessary. And even, you know, we have the technology here that we're using, and we don't even, can't even get into the supply chain that creates that. But Sarika, is the unspoken thing here when it comes to our consumption, that some of it's necessary, that when we have to unwind our habits, we're unwinding 40 years of advertising about convenience and effectively what might be looked back at 100 years' time as propaganda to consume a certain way, and that it's very hard to unwind that from people's lives. It's multi-generational at this stage.
I think so. I think there's definitely a sense of people buying things because they're cheap. I mean, I even think, you know, when I was younger, you know, if you wanted to go out and buy a new top, you know, you might have to save up for a little bit. Whereas nowadays, you know, a lot of young people, you know, or anybody, in fact, you can go out and get a few T-shirts for next to nothing. So there's the cheap goods that are there. But also there is a constant pressure, I think, particularly on women to constantly be looking good, you know, that there's that whole Instagram thing of never wearing the same dress or the same t-shirt in any post that you put up. So there is definitely a mindset that I think needs to shift. And I think it is, I think it's quite difficult, actually. I think it just starts with asking yourself, you know, do I need this? Am I going to wear this t-shirt? Do I really need that new pair of jeans or whatever, you know? But I do think it's a slow shifting change that's going to take time.
And thinking about the pace, so your column is about, you know, one change and it reflects, in some ways, the way you came onto it almost is reflect the journey that people are taking, and the reception to hearing these messages is there. And at the same time, there's the doom aspect of it. We only have X amount of time. Where do you think the balance is between bringing everybody along slowly or bringing some people along quickly in order to, you know, how have you found, say, the reception to your columns?
In general, it's been very positive.
Yeah.
But you do also have, you know, comments that are like, oh, well, that's not going to help. Or, you know, as I mentioned, you know, one getting a reusable coffee cup, that's not going to save the planet. To be honest, like, I'm just starting on this journey. So I'm not actually sure what the answer to that is. I think a lot of it, personally, I can say that for me, it's very important to get the information. And, you know, when you read some of the, as you say, the doom and gloom stuff about it, you go, oh God, you know, where can I start? But I actually feel that is kind of a catalyst for getting people out there and getting people to change. I mean, if you look at, you know, Greta Thunberg and the Friday's climate strikes, I mean, it's amazing to see that level of, you know, that sense of urgency that young people have. So I think personally, I'm kind of buoyed by that. But also I think I try to take it back always to this very simple idea that what we need to do as individuals is just to use less. We just need to consume less. And like, OK, that's complicated when you get into all the details of how you do that exactly. But fundamentally, it comes back to those things of, you know, maybe I should take the train. Maybe I don't need to buy that. Maybe I don't need to go on this holiday. It's just bringing it back to that idea of less, less, less.
This is a big question, so feel free to either not answer or not know the answer. Our entire economy is built on consumption. We're never more than 2 degrees of separation away from somebody, a relative or a friend whose job depends on not even conspicuous consumption, just regular consumption, be it in tech or clothing or food or packaging or even in transport. When you think about small changes, you know, you think about the alternatives to cleaning products, and I'm not saying, oh, look at all the jobs that are going to go,
but wipe out the cleaning
industry. Yeah, but when you kind of allow yourself to come out of the small bits and then think big, do you think it's possible to create a version of an economy that isn't so rapacious and depends on us to buy and throw away?
Well, I think there's...
When you're talking to government, when somebody comes to you in government and says, that's all very well, but there's jobs dependent on that, on buying that and burning it.
Look, I appreciate that it's not easy, but the reality is that's what we have to find is a new type of economy, because it is unsustainable. And do we all want to live in a country that is unpleasant to live in? And do we want to live surrounded by our waste? I mean, the thing is, at the moment, the waste gets put away in a landfill over here, and it's not. But if it was outside our doorstep, we would tackle it fairly quickly. But climate change is bringing it to our doorstep by affecting the weather. You know, we know they're talking on the radio about water shortages again. So it's making it real and it's in our face. So we have no choice but to change. And also, I think, you know, we're bombarded with advertising all the time, as you say. And stepping back from that has been like such a relief. Like, honestly, a relief to not...
This is for you personally.
This is for me personally.
With your unmarked bottles with no telephone helplines on them.
Nicer.
Do you have any more? Yeah, if you have further questions about Domestos kind of thing.
But also, you know, I've unsubscribed from lots of emails, and I realise now, having unsubscribed from them, that there was just, they were noise in my life, buy, more and more, sale. And you can't help it. You're so programmed over the years that, like, there's a sale, 20% off, 50% off, whatever it is. you can't, they're experts. They know how to hook us. And I was totally hooked. So unsubscribing from all of that and like actually stepping back, like Circa said, and really asking myself, do I really need that? Okay, I might want it right this minute, but like, let's wait a few days and see, do I still want it in a week? And if I still want it in a week, well, maybe I'll allow myself to have it, you know? But do I need it? And, you know, I spend a fraction of the time shopping that I used to spend, be that shopping for food or clothes or things for the kids or toys, whatever it is. And you have more time in your life. I never go to the supermarket. I never go to the shops at the weekend. We don't as a family go shopping. You know, we try. It's, you know, it's a big deal if we have to go to the shops. So people now, some people go to the shops almost like a family outing as a trip. It'd be much better if people step back from that and find other things to do with their time that might actually give them more pleasure than going spending their money.
Yeah, that hadn't occurred to me actually, is the time freed up if you just buy
amazing.
Less stuff.
Yeah. And also, like, you know, one of the first things I did was kind of look at the house, and I've got two kids and we had loads of toys, you know, loads of Lego. And, you know, I didn't, like, I'm not a horrible mother completely. I didn't like throw it all away, but I did box up a load of it and put it in away out of sight. And then every so often I'd bring out a box and it's like, oh my God, Hexbugs, you know, this is like a new
toy.
New,
yeah.
Plus also the most amazing thing happens when you do that. Like ourselves, the kids are overcome with the clutter of the toys. And they don't even want to look at the toys because it's like, I don't even know where to start with it. Mm-hmm. It's like people looking at a stuffed wardrobe. So like one stage, I put a little box with a small amount of Lego in it and I just put it out on the footstool, and the boys had play dates over. And the next thing I looked around and the four boys were squirreling through this tiny box of Lego because it had been brought out as one tiny box. They were sharing it and they built lots of little tiny things from this. If I know that if I'd put out 10 boxes of Lego, they probably wouldn't play with the Lego at all because it's overwhelming. So trying to kind of calm that noise in your space and in your house, it's really cathartic, you know, to kind of declutter your space. And you see it with your kids as well. They respond really well to it.
Apart from egregiously plugging your own stuff, if you were to recommend to somebody who's listening now and they're starting and they have that nagging sense of, you know, gloom about climate change, and by the way, feel free to egregiously plug your own blogs and columns as well. But so you're starting, you're not a bad person, you know, but there is a sense that all is that sense of, in, you know, in Michael Douglas, he's in Falling Down, you're like, I'm the bad guy. I thought it was Captain Pollutatron over here. Mm. So you realize, and you don't want to feel condemned by people for your choices. How have you found separating all the information, or what's the best way to curate the information for yourself, Sarika?
Well, firstly, just in response to that, I spoke to a woman who works for the Conscious Cup campaign, and she brilliantly sums it up. This is a campaign to encourage cafes to give refunds or to give discounts to people using reusable coffee cups. And she put it simply that, you know, it's not just the individual. It is also government and it is also industry. And I think, you know, starting off, you know, if someone is beginning to think about what their role is in all of this, you know, it's not just one person. It has to come as part of a package and has to come as part of other aspects that have to happen. I wrote recently about going shopping in the supermarkets without trying to buy any plastic and just how difficult that was. And
You came out with an apple, did you?
Yeah, I came out with barely nothing. And, it's for me, as an exercise, it was just important just to go about that very simple task of just going, oh, well, I just want to buy a little bit less plastic. That seems simple enough. And so the idea of the exercise really was just to become aware of how much plastic we buy and how much we take into our houses and how much we don't really want a lot of the time. And I think for me, beginning on this journey of trying to use less, the first step is just being aware of how much I use. And I think that's a good place for people to start.
So in that sense, you don't get lost down an internet rabbit hole because it's your life. You're literally looking around the house and looking at your shopping bag and looking at your choices and maybe not making an immediate change, but just almost a Stocktake?
I think so. I mean, you know, like I do think we have to begin somewhere. I mean, and rather than, you know, trying immediately to change everything, if you start with one thing, yeah, just being aware of it, and then maybe you can try and go, well, I'll try to buy loose vegetables when I can, you know, but there again, we do need the supermarkets to come in, and a lot of them have made pledges, but they're slowly coming, you know. So we do need supermarkets to come in and make changes, and it needs to be mainstream as well. Like, you know, sometimes you hear people saying, oh, you know, making their response to climate change being about a lifestyle issue, and, you know, beautiful kind of homeware, and really, it needs to be mainstream. We need to be able to get loose goods in supermarkets, bring our own bags. You know, it needs to be everywhere. It needs to be made simple for people to reduce their packaging, for example.
Sometimes the first step is good. Sometimes the second step can be even more crucial, because, like, if you make the first step, you try and get loose veg, and then you find out the veg comes from, and it might, you know, you want to support Guatemalan farmers as well too, or Peruvian apple growers. But you can often feel discouraged. You're going, oh, what's the food miles on that? Is it about giving oneself a break, you know, when it comes to the second effort you make? Because often the first, you might find that you get a slight metaphorical slap in the face from the first step you make. How have you found that second step?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I totally agree with Circa that, like, it's the awareness. So, like, once you start doing this, you very quickly become aware of all the bad choices you're making. And I think it's important not to beat yourself up too much, because, you know, the infrastructure isn't in place in Ireland to make it easy right now. And, you know, so, for example, the first time I went to my local shop with my own Tupperware containers to buy chicken breasts, and the guy's looking at me going, you what? You know, but now he knows me and he doesn't mind, and he knows how to take the weight of the container and put the chicken breasts in and all the rest. So, you know, it's getting over. Sometimes these things can be a bit cringy when you first start them. Like, you know, so, for example, I bought celery yesterday in the shop, and it had a plastic packaging on it. And at the checkout, I just took off the plastic packaging and just said to the girl, would you mind if I gave that to you? Now, I know that's not going to change. The plastic package still exists, but it's giving the message back all the time. I don't want this. I didn't ask for my celery to come in plastic bags. You only sell it. I need it for dinner, so I have to buy it now. But, you know, so you can do little steps like that that aren't going to change the world. But it's very important in terms of giving the message to the shop that you don't want the plastic.
And that's part of the message for industry. And we know that top 100 companies do all 70% of the damage, and we may find it hard to communicate with them. What about our politicians, some of which are sitting on a climate change bill and, you know, blocked it for various reasons, you know, because there's other lobby groups who represent humans, not robots. What, as consumers, have you found could be an effective next step? Because it mightn't always necessarily be the ballot box immediately for that, because, you know, candidates are human and they need to be a good candidate as well. So can we make that sometimes feeling cringy step to political awareness? How does that work, do you think?
I think a lot of the time, if you look at the recent, you know, local elections, there was definitely, if you, you know, the turnout was definitely, there was definitely a surge towards the Green Party. Everybody was commenting on it. And in that perspective, you can definitely see that on the ground, there is a feeling that people are worried about this issue. The government hasn't been that worried about this issue. They are responding. Their climate change, their climate action plan was very much a response to them waking up and going, oh, Jesus, people are actually kind of concerned about this. So I do believe that, you know, when people say, oh, you know, personal change, it's not all about personal change. The two have to really have to come together. And governments do have to respond to what's happening on the ground, or we would hope that they would. So that kind of gives me some hope in terms of, you know, the groundswell of people turning towards this as a big issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, like, from, like, you know, the talks that I've given to different organisations, like, it's very clear that people want to change. People are, they just don't know where to start. And I think there is a roadmap for, you know, that's helpful to people, you know, looking at blogs and tips and, like, small things that they can take on board in their daily behaviour. And when it comes to the government, sometimes I think they're struggling to find out where to start as well. And they're very nervous about telling people what to eat. and telling people to, you know, to change their behaviour. They're okay about saying renewables. Let's talk about renewables and carbon tax. They're really scared when it comes to interfering with people's free will and their personal habits. But that's actually, that's where we need to go. And that's what needs to change. And it's not saying that everybody has to turn vegetarian and vegan tomorrow. But, you know, if you're making a shepherd's pie, you can put 20% less meat and put lentils in. I promise you, your children, your husband won't notice if you don't. They'll know now because I've just told everybody.
It's salt is what people want anyway. Yeah. I don't care what.
But, you know, there are, you know, incremental changes. But people... people want to change, but they don't know where to start, and they need some guidance on that. And I think expecting people to spend 10, 20, 30,000 on retrofitting their house before you've even held their hand a little bit to show them how to where to buy a keep cup and a water bottle is like asking them to run a marathon before they've done the 5K. So, you know, I think we need to remember that and help people that we're starting from a low base. But people will very quickly get on board because the appetite is there for it. But it needs to be, you know, piece by piece and step by step.
And my final question for both of you, considering this is a year by year project, what are your plans, your personal plans for the next year, say, along this, apart from maintaining? What will you expand upon?
Well, for me, this has been a kind of a side hack for me, and I'm trying to build that up into something. I, you know, there's an awful lot of interest. I've started talking to schools, and I've given talks to different organisations, and there's a real appetite for it. So I'm setting up my website, and my plan is to use that as a mechanism to get the information out to people. Simple steps that I've done in my own life that have worked, to try and just help people along their journey and invite them to join with me in trying to get to where we all want to go.
And do you have a part of your existence that you're going to target next? You've done the cleaning, you've reduced the amount of meat in the shepherd's pie.
What's the
elephant in the room that you need to save the elephant, what's the pollution elephant that you want to cut down on?
Well, at the moment, my focus is on the meal planning side of things. I mean, food waste is a massive part of climate change. And part of what I'm trying to tackle at the moment is just to set up an easy system for me to plan our meals out, even just for 3 days, 4 days, even just the week. And I find that that's a massive help in terms of even just it makes my life a lot easier if I know what dinners I'm going to be cooking for the week. And also then I can kind of massively reduce the food waste. We really waste very little food. I've started composting, but trying to, for anybody who's cooking the dinners in a house, it's always like, what the hell are we going to cook for dinner? So
trying, and will they eat it?
Yeah, and will they eat it? Exactly. Yeah. So I found a nice app that I'm using at the moment, and it's working really well. But when I've got that down, it'll be going up as my next blog post to say, look, here's a system that you can use, and I find that that's a real help in terms of my own stress levels, as well as making sure that we eat healthily and that we don't waste any food, because a lot of energy went into growing it, so let's not waste it, you know.
And Sarika, in your life and in your journalism over the next year, say, where do you think you'll be finding out about and shedding light for others on?
Well, there's certainly lots in the home that I would be hoping to look into in terms of, you know, beauty products, you know, using what alternatives are there to cotton wool or earbuds, all those kind of issues I'm going to look at. It's definitely a journey for me, myself, in terms of discovery of where I'll go next. So I don't want to set it on any definite path. I do also want to take it also outside of the domestic sphere a little bit as well, in terms of, you know, one of the bigger issues is also flights. I mean, that's one of the biggest, if we're talking about an elephant in the room, flights is one of the biggest issues. And it's probably one of the hardest ones as well, when you think about, you know, a lot of family are are living abroad, you know, how do you go about that? You know, can you, is it realistic to take a train somewhere? And so that's one thing I want to look into. I feel like it's one of those things that people don't really want to talk about very much because it's a tricky one. It's difficult. Another issue I really want to do is, and I haven't done it yet, but I want to take my children on the Friday strikes for climate. One of the things when we talk about doom and gloom and how uncertain the future is that the really positive side is that a lot of the changes, a lot of the pressure is coming from young people, and that gives me huge hope. And I think it's lovely to think about them thinking about their future and them telling us what they want and what they think is important. That's a lovely kind of positive way to look at things, and also get feedback from them about what they think needs to change. So that's something I'm looking forward to doing as well.
Okay, well, that sounds, I'll do both of those as well. So, so you've been listening to The World, etc. with myself, Colm O'Regan, and Paula Butler, environmental consultant, who has started a new initiative called Eco-Conscious Living Project, and also Sarika Hamilton, a journalist with the Irish Times, who has been writing about one change, single changes that somebody can make. So she's been writing those every second week. As you heard there, we have been acknowledging that this is an effort to start a positive conversation about what individuals and families can do. And we mentioned government initiatives. We're not going to give government and policymakers a free pass in terms of some of the big decisions to be made with national policy. But that's probably a wider conversation for another day, which we'll hopefully have in the near future. It is important to think about one's own choices, but also to let your local TDs and local representatives know that you care about the issues. And as mentioned, it did come up in the recent election. So let them know that you care about tackling climate change. That is one way of having a simple political impact. So thank you once again for listening. This was The World, Etc. with myself, Colm O'Regan, in association with Trocra.